All right, so let's finish up this meiosis stuff. First, though, remember that meiosis occurs in germline cells, whereas mitosis occurs in somatic cells. And remember that germline cells are called germline cells because they are cells that produce gametes, which can be called germs. All right, so germline cells are not gametes. Germline cells give rise to gametes, and they do that by undergoing meiosis. So meiosis not only is cell division, but it is cell division that produces gametes in us, in humans. Now, there's quite a few similarities between mitosis and meiosis, but there's obviously some important differences. And one huge difference between meiosis and mitosis is that mitosis involves just one cell division event, right? There's only one splitting. But in meiosis, there are two cell division events. So one cell splits into two, and then each of those two cells goes on to split into two new cells. And that's why overall meiosis is divided into meiosis 1, Roman numeral 1, and meiosis 2. That's what you see here on slide 9. Now, this is the simplest possible example, just to show you the point. This is not a human cell. This is some made-up organism. But that cell on the top represents a germline cell. And what is the N here? The N is 1, exactly. That's why it's the simplest possible case. Why is it an N of 1? Because there's one kind of chromosome, and therefore when there's one from each parent, you have one pair. So this is not only an N of 1, but this is a diploid cell, notice, right? But I've already told you that germline cells are diploid cells. By the way, before I go on with meiosis, I want to explain something about germline cells. Germline cells undergo meiosis, like I said, but they also undergo mitosis. Somatic cells undergo only mitosis, but a germline cell undergoes mitosis and meiosis. And the reason is that you only have a small population of germline cells in your body, which are some of the cells in your gonads, right? Either ovary or testis. And each time you make gametes, you're using one of those germline cells. So if germline cells only underwent meiosis, then you would be depleting your population of germline cells throughout life, right? So germline cells undergo mitosis first, which produces an exact copy, right? So now where you had one germline cell, you have two. One of those germline cells goes on to meiosis. And so you don't have that germline cell anymore, but you're going to have gametes come from it. The other one replaces the one that you lost, so that you maintain that population of germline cells. Does that make sense? Does that not make sense? See, let me show you in pictures. if these are your germline cells, we'll just say three of them, then you randomly pick one of these three for meiosis, it no longer exists. This is going to go on to make gametes, but you don't have that germline cell anymore. Then when you pick another germline cell for meiosis, you're going to eliminate another one, right? Once you eliminate this last one, you're going to make no more gametes. You have no more germline cells left. But if you start with three, and you first say, okay, this one's going to undergo mitosis first. Now you have two where there were one. One of them can go on to meiosis, and the other one stays behind. So you still have the full population left. That's what I mean. But what we care about in the rest of this slideshow is meiosis itself. So this is meiosis in a germline cell that has an N of 1.
All right, just to clarify, that's a diploid cell because there are two different chromosomes up there.
No, it's a diploid cell because there are two of that one type of chromosome it has.
Okay, so if it had three, there would be three chromosomes, but still just one.
If there were three and they were all the same size, in other words, they had the same kinds of genes, then it would still be an N of one, but we'd be talking about a triploid cell, which is a totally different thing.
It would be 23N.
If this were a human cell, germline cell, then there would be 46 chromosomes, because there would be two of each kind. There's only one kind of chromosome here. But there are two of them. That's why it's a diploid cell. All right? Just quickly compare that to slide 6. This has 6 overall chromosomes, but it has 3 types of chromosomes. 2 of each type. So it's diploid with an N of 3, a 2N of 6. Okay, the types are small, medium, and large. Red and blue correspond to parental origin. Red is paternal, blue is maternal, or it's the other way around. Okay? In slide 9, you only have one type of chromosome, medium size. But you have two of them, one from each of the two parents. So it's diploid still. 2N equals 2, N equals 1 for this cell. Everyone clear on that? Okay. So this is the simplest case simply because N equals 1. But this is a diploid cell, like all germline cells in your body. And it goes on, you know, the cell at the top here really represents a somatic cell before it gets to the S phase of interphase. But when it gets to the S, what happens? DNA replication. So now each of its chromosomes gets replicated, and so each chromosome is a replicated chromosome consisting of two identical sister chromatids. But notice that since we call a replicated chromosome still just one chromosome, the number of chromosomes hasn't changed here, even though the amount of DNA has doubled. This is still a diploid cell. But since DNA has been replicated, this diploid cell now has enough DNA in it for 4 total chromosomes once everything splits apart. Okay? You see that? Each chromatid is enough DNA to be its own chromosome when it's on its own. All right. The important event in meiosis 1, which is the first half of meiosis, is that you have one cell splitting into two, but this is quite different from mitosis. So think back to what mitosis is like. When do things line up in mitosis?
Metaphase.
And during metaphase, when all the things are lined up, what are the things that are lined up? Replicated chromosomes. Okay, so in the human, how many, and this is a diploid cell we're talking about in mitosis, how many different things line up during mitosis in a human cell?
46.
Exactly. 46 things line up in a diploid cell. And that's because the father's version of chromosome 3 does not care at all what the mother's version of chromosome 3 is doing. Okay? So the homologs don't find each other in mitosis. Each replicated chromosome is acting on its own. And therefore, there are 2N different things that line up during mitosis. Right? That's not what happens in meiosis. In meiosis, N things line up, not 2N. It's not individual replicated chromosomes that line up during meiosis. Instead, it's homologous pairs of chromosomes, which are also called tetrads, like I said. Well, for an N of 1, there's only one tetrad, right? There's only one homologous pair. And so it has lined up here. This would be the metaphase plate right between them. These are the two poles of the cell. Let me draw you a picture of what that would be like in mitosis. In mitosis, each of these two replicated chromosomes would be acting separately, not caring what the other one does. So this is the metaphase plate. They line up as individual chromosomes. And when anaphase comes, the two things that split in mitosis are sister chromatids. Okay? In meiosis, it's not individual chromosomes that line up. This is metaphase plate this way. Instead, it's homologous pairs of chromosomes. And in anaphase, what separates are not sister chromatids, but homologs. The blue homolog is going to go to one cell, the red homolog is going to go to the other cell. And notice that each of those is still replicated. The two sister chromatids that make it up are still connected. All right? That's an important difference because that is why the ploidy is reduced. Remember I said that meiosis cuts the ploidy in two, cuts it in half. Well, that occurs in the first stage of meiosis, meiosis one. So, the cell that's right above the bar that's labeled as meiosis one, this one right here, everyone make sure that you recognize this as a diploid cell. Right? During meiosis one, that splits into two cells. Be sure that you recognize each of these two cells as already being haploid. You notice that these are haploid? I can't hear you.
Yes.
Are you just saying that so I'll go on, or you really recognize this as being haploid? Haploid means having only one of each kind of chromosome. Well, this does, and so does this. This has two of each kind of chromosome. So it's meiosis one that takes the cell from diploid to haploid. But since we started with replicated chromosomes, and those two sister chromatids in each replicated chromosome are still together, we have, after meiosis one but before meiosis two, two cells that, even though they are haploid, are still replicated with respect to their chromosomes. And that's why we need another round of cell division to split the two chromatids apart in each cell. And that's exactly what mitosis does, right? And that's why meiosis 2 is just like mitosis. In meiosis 2, you have all the individual replicated chromosomes line up, in this case it's only one, but in a different cell there would be multiple ones, they all line up like this, and then the two sister chromatids split apart, and they're no longer called chromatids once they're separate. Then they're chromosomes, right? That happens right here in meiosis II. That's why this one haploid cell that's already haploid, but replicated, can give rise to two cells, each of which is still haploid, because when you separate chromatids, you don't mess with diploidy. But now they have unreplicated chromosomes. Same thing happening for the red ones. And since there's two cell division events, you end up with a total of four cells. One splits into two, each of those splits into two, for a total of four. So one germline cell, if it goes all the way through meiosis, will produce four gametes, either egg cells or sperm cells. Okay? And look at the fact that these four gametes are not identical to each other. And that's because your two versions of each chromosome that you have are not identical to each other because your parents weren't identical. Right? So that's another huge difference between meiosis and mitosis. Meiosis reduces diploidy, whereas mitosis does not change it at all. And meiosis produces non-identical cells in the end. They're not identical to each other, and they're clearly not identical to the original cell because they don't have the same ploidy. All right, everyone on board so far on this? All right, let's go to 10 then. 10 shows you a cartoon that's very much like the one we looked at for mitosis, but this one's for meiosis, and therefore there are more pictures because there's meiosis 1 and meiosis 2. So let's look at what's happening in these. Now, the individual halves of meiosis, in other words, meiosis 1 and meiosis 2, each of those has steps within it or phases within it named just like in mitosis. So you have prophase, prometaphase, which is not shown here, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase in each of the two meiosis steps. And therefore, that's why we call them prophase 1, metaphase 1, and so on. And then prophase 2, metaphase 2, and so on. Okay? You don't need those Roman numerals in mitosis because there's only one cell division event. But the numbers are important in meiosis because different things are happening in meiosis 1 compared to meiosis 2. All right, so let's look at prophase 1. What's happened here is already quite different from what's happening in mitosis. In mitosis, the individual homologs don't care what the other homolog is doing, right? The two number 13s in a human don't care what the other one, each other, is doing. In meiosis, they do, and in prophase 1, they get together. So, what is the N of this cell? This is not a human cell, this is a simpler cell, for example. It's not one. One would mean that there's only one kind of chromosome.
Three.
It's three. There are three kinds of chromosomes here. Small, medium, large. But it's a diploid cell, right? So there's two of each kind. There's two smalls, two mediums, two larges. One from each parent. Yeah, so N is three, 2N is six. There's six total chromosomes here. Three blue ones from the mother, three red ones from the father. But what's different here drastically compared to mitosis is that the two small ones are finding each other, the two medium ones are finding each other, the two large ones are finding each other. And so that process of finding each other and coming together, two homologs coming together to form a tetrad or a homologous pair, That's called synapsis. That's the process. What they do is synapse, that's the verb, which means to come together. And that's why now you have three homologous pairs. Each pair is half red and half blue. Now, by the way, in all this talk about sexual reproduction, I haven't really talked about why it evolved. There were millions and millions of years, billions of years of evolution before sex evolved. And still, nowadays, most organisms on Earth, which are the bacteria, do not use sex. So it's not necessary for survival. But what is it about sex that is good in the sense of survival of the species is concerned? What does sex give us? Exactly, good. Sex mixes up genes. It shuffles the genetic deck, in a sense. So it drastically increases genetic variability. When a bacterium reproduces, it just produces two exact copies of itself, genetically identical, unless mutation happens to occur. But it usually doesn't, right? So there's no shuffling of the deck. You just make exact copies. Well, if you happen to be an organism that is very, very well fit to the environment, why would you want to mess with it? If it ain't broke, don't fix it, in other words, is their strategy. So keep producing exactly the same thing and it'll do just as well as you did. Unless what? Exactly, unless things change. Well, when you have sexual reproduction, you don't make exact copies as offspring. You shuffle the deck. And yes, it's true that those offspring might not be as fit as you are. But it's also true they might even be more fit, especially if something changes in the environment. So the whole idea behind sex is to drastically increase genetic variability. This only works, though, if you have variation to begin with. Right? It only works if you have two different kinds of DNA in your parents. What is the original source of all that genetic variation? Mutation, exactly. So mutation creates genetic variability, but sex amplifies that variability. And there's three very important sources of that added variability that sex gives. Two of those sources happen in meiosis one. All right, and the first one happens in prophase one, right here. That first source of additional variation is called crossing over. And it occurs during synapsis, which is when the two homologs in a pair get together to form that pair. Okay, when the father's version and the mother's version of chromosome number whatever get together, that's synapsis. And they not only get together, but they swap part of their selves. So let me kind of draw a cartoon here. If this is a replicated blue chromosome, and the homologue of this one would be the red version, well, here they are before they've crossed over, right? They're still separate chromosomes. But when they synapse, they can cross over. And that point at which they cross over, which is right here on my cartoon, is called a chiasma. which simply means a cross or an X shape. Well, not only do they cross over at the chiasma, but they trade little legs of the chromosome with each other. So it now turns into this. You see that? That crossing over created these chromosomes that aren't like either parent now. This is a brand new poker hand, in a sense, if you think about it by analogy with cards. You've shuffled the deck here and come up with a combination that neither parent had. The original cell did not have that at all. Okay? That's crossing over. And not only is it the first important source of additional variation that sex provides, but it's the most abundant source, meaning that the number of possible ways that you can have crossing over occur is humorously huge. It's practically infinity. Because consider the fact that this DNA strand, this chromosome, is millions of nucleotides long. If you can cross over at any point along those millions, and you want to calculate how many ways that there are to make combinations, you're raising something to enormous exponents, and therefore it is ridiculously huge. I mean, bigger than the number of atoms that are in the universe. And this alone is why you're never going to have the same person created twice, even by the same parents. Crossing over gives you a ridiculously large number of possibilities, and therefore gives you a ridiculously large number of possible gametes that that same individual can reproduce, can produce. Yeah. Twins is an accident, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Well, I'll just talk about it right now. There's two ways that twins can be produced, right? There are fraternal twins and identical twins. If we're talking about identical twins, which are the only twins that are actually genetically identical, then that's an accident in which one zygote, which was supposed to be one baby, splits before it starts developing. So now you have two zygotes that are identical because it split, and each of those goes on to form a multicellular baby. So you have two babies that are genetically identical. So that's an accident. Zygotes aren't supposed to split. The other kinds of twins, which are fraternal twins, are not identical. They're just like any brothers or sisters. They just happen to be born at the same time and cohabit the womb. But that's another type of accident. Normally, if we're talking about humans, the female ovulates only one egg each period. Right? And somehow the body knows to go back and forth between ovaries. So you ovulate from this one, then you ovulate from this one the next time. Well, some women will ovulate from both. So they'll drop two eggs at once. And those can both be individually fertilized by the same batch of sperm, but by different sperm. Right? From the same conception event. And therefore, they're non-identical zygotes. They just happen to be in the same space, and they go on to develop into two siblings.
Is it true that twins are genetic? Like, every couple of generations, like, somebody has a bunch of
twins? Yeah, because whatever causes those accidents can be an actual trait of that person. And so, you know, if a woman is, for genetic reasons, something's going on in her body that's causing her to drop more than one egg, chances are she'll keep doing that. And if she keeps getting pregnant, she'll have multiple batches of twins. But not necessarily. It is just a higher percentage. Yeah.
What about the pads?
Yeah, that all happens way before mating even occurs. Yeah, we're not talking about any intercourse yet. We're talking about gamete formation here. That's what meiosis is.
Oh.
So this is producing the eggs or producing the sperm. If this is happening in a virgin, It doesn't matter what kind of gamete you make, right? You're not going to get any humans out of that.
Yeah.
So the mating event comes later. But just from this, what crossing over means is that you're never going to make the same gamete twice, even within the same individual. So I've been producing sperm daily, as men do. We men make our sperm fresh daily. Women don't. They undergo a different process, which is part of their weirdness. But anyway, we make millions of sperm every day. And I've been making millions of sperm every day for decades. And I'd like to be able to for a couple more decades. But despite all of those millions, every single day, millions more, the chance that any two sperm within my entire lifetime are the same is effectively zero. There's almost no chance that I'll produce the same sperm twice. Because of these ridiculously high numbers of ways that you can crossover. All right, so crossing over is occurring here, and notice on this one, you have two chiasma form, or chiasmata, which is the plural, form on one tetrad. That even increases the number of possibilities. But that happens in prophase one. Synapsis and crossing over. Now, in metaphase one, we skip over pro-metaphase one because nothing really interesting happens there. But in metaphase one, you have lining up, just like in metaphase of mitosis. But, like I said before, and importantly, what lines up in metaphase one is different from what lines up in mitosis. In metaphase one, you have pairs of homologous chromosomes line up instead of individual chromosomes. If this were mitosis, there would be six things lining up. But it's in meiosis, so the two ones find themselves, the two twos and the two threes find themselves. And they line up as pairs. Now this brings up the second major source of additional variation that sex causes. First one was crossing over. The second one is called independent assortment. Now, assortment here refers to how a pair of chromosomes lines up at the metaphase plate. And basically, each individual pair of chromosomes has two ways it can line up. In terms of this cartoon, it could line up with red at the top, blue at the bottom, or with blue on the top and red on the bottom. Because each pair is like a head and tail coin, right? The two homologs in a pair are not identical to each other. They came from different parents. So how each one assorts, well, there's two possibilities. But the fact that it's independent assortment means that how one pair lines up doesn't at all depend on how the other ones line up. So you don't have all three reds facing one direction and all three blues facing the other direction, unless it happens by chance. Instead, each pair is like a coin flip. This one landed red up. This one landed red up. This one landed red down, or blue up. Okay, that's independent assortment. And the reason that's another source of variation is because when these things split, notice that the two cells that are created get different batches of chromosomes. Right? This one at the top is going to get two reds and a blue. This one's going to get two blues and a red. But what these two cells get depends on how they each individually line up. Well, if you only have an N of one, and therefore just one pair, it doesn't matter how they line up. You're going to get one cell with a red and one cell with a blue. But if you have two or a greater number of kinds of chromosomes, if N is two or bigger, then you're going to have more and more possibilities. In fact, you're going to have two raised to the n minus 1 possibilities just for independent assortment. So for humans, in which n is 23, you have 2 to the 22nd power of possible ways that they can line up, which is, I think it's like 8 million, something like that. 8 million seems like a big number, and it is big, but it is tiny, tiny, tiny number compared to the number of ways they can cross over, which already occurred. So you multiply this huge number by another 8 million, and you get an even huger number. But that's what independent assortment is. Okay? Anaphase, you have splitting, but since this is anaphase 1, you don't have splitting of chromatids, you have splitting of homologs. And that, right there, is where ploidy went from diploid to haploid. Because now these two cells that are produced each have only one of each kind of chromosome. But each of those chromosomes that each cell has is still replicated. It still has two chromatids making it up, because those didn't split yet. That's the whole reason why you need meiosis II. And so when you look at meiosis II, the pictures look just like mitosis. The only difference is you've already mixed things up in meiosis I, so you already have combinations of red and blue within chromosomes. But what lines up here in metaphase II are individual replicated chromosomes, just like in mitosis. Then in anaphase 2, the chromatids split. But that doesn't change the ploidy, because two sister chromatids stuck together still count as one chromosome. Chromatids, once they're on their own, get named chromosomes, but they are now in two different cells. So each cell still has the same ploidy. It got reduced back here to haploid, though. So these two cells that come out of meiosis 1 are already haploid. Each of those produces two cells in meiosis II for a total of four cells that are haploid and consist of non-replicated chromosomes. So that's why one germline cell produces four gametes. And those gametes are different from each other because of the sources of variation. And they're different from the original cell for that same reason, and also because they are haploid instead of diploid. What were you going to ask? Oh, well, that depends on whether you're a man or a woman. In men, this occurs over hours. In women, it can take more than 40 years. And that's because men make their sperm fresh every day, like I said, from the beginning. Women, on the other hand, only have a certain amount of eggs to last their entire lifetime. And that's already determined before that woman is born. So each of the females here, you started out with a certain number of eggs that already started meiosis before you were born, when you were in your mother's uterus. So meiosis is started and then it's paused in women until they reach sexual maturity. So it's paused automatically for 13, 14 years, whatever. And then it resumes, but it resumes just for a chosen developing follicle. So you have this whole collection of follicles, which can be eggs, which can give rise to eggs in your ovaries, but each 28 days or so, you pick one of those to go through the rest of the process, well, most of the rest of the process, meiosis II, to produce an egg, but it pauses again and doesn't complete meiosis II unless it gets fertilized. So females are a lot more complicated than males. Well, she starts with several million and she immediately loses most of those. So she's left only with, I can't remember the numbers, maybe a million or so that are viable eggs to last for her lifetime, which is way more than she needs. She's still going to lose most of those throughout her life. But at menopause, even though she has eggs left, hormonal changes disallow them from being released, and they just degenerate. But now that we brought up the difference between males and females, the four cells, if this were a male, all four of these gametes, although they're different from each other because they've shuffled the deck differently, they're all viable, meaning they're all sperm that are ready to go. In a female, she makes four cells as well, but she needs to be making the egg, and the egg really needs to be as big as it can be, because a zygote, which is the union of a sperm and an egg, really is just an egg that's had the sperm's DNA added to it. The sperm is just a DNA carrier. It doesn't add any cytoplasm to the zygote. So the zygote is the same size as the egg, basically, with some added DNA. Well, if she made four eggs, they would only be, it was one quarter the size. They would only have one fourth of that cytoplasm, and therefore it would be a reduced chance of surviving. So she puts one egg into her basket, so to speak, by making four cells, three of which she makes small as possible and just gets rid of them. Those are called polar bodies. And she makes that one remaining cell as big as possible so that if it receives a cell, it can be, has the most chance of surviving as a zygote. All right, that is meiosis. And slide 11 shows you the major differences between mitosis and meiosis, which we've already discussed. Notice that in metaphase, what you have lining up in mitosis are individual replicated chromosomes. 2N different things, if we're talking about a diploid cell. Whereas in meiosis, N different pairs line up. Mitosis splits chromatids. Meiosis 1 splits homologs. And then meiosis 2 splits chromatids. Okay. Slide 12. This slide shows you the effects of independent assortment. This is for an N of 2. Everyone recognize this is an N of 2? Well, when you have an N of 2, that means 2 to the N minus 1 is 2 to the 1, or just 2. There's two possibilities, right? Both reds on one side, both blues on one side is one possibility, or a red and a blue for each cell is the other possibility. Well, if you add one more type of chromosome for an N of 3, you have two possibilities for each of these two, so 2 times 2. And then if you add another one, 2 times 2 times 2. That's the source of this formula. We have 2 to the 22nd power, ways in which they can line up. So this is showing you the effect of independent assortment. Figure 13 shows you the effect of crossing over, which happens earlier, by the way, remember. Crossing over occurs in prophase 1. Independent assortment occurs in metaphase 1. And this crossing over leads to much higher number of possibilities. But they both are important sources of genetic variability that sex produces. I only told you two of the three. The third, does anyone know what the third source of genetic variation by sex is? Well, so far we've only made those gametes. What do you use the gametes for? How? Yes. And the third source is random fertilization. So you have, each parent has this ridiculously enormous size deck of cards, basically, where each card is a gamete. Because there's so many different kinds, you can think of that as a huge deck of cards. Almost infinitely big, because of crossing over. Well, random fertilization refers to the fact that when two individuals mate, one gamete from the male is chosen from that huge deck, and one gamete is chosen from the female from that huge deck. So the number of possibilities is that huge number for the males multiplied by the huge number for the females, which makes it infinity, basically. Okay, so random fertilization is that third source. All right, now this final slide, I think it is, yeah. The final slide shows you what can go wrong. Now, before I talk about what goes wrong, let me just define what we call the separation of things that occur during this cell division. Another name for separation is disjunction. To disjoin means to separate. So disjunction is just a noun that means separation. Therefore, non-disjunction means failure to separate. And so non-disjunction is a mistake that can occur. And as you see here, non-disjunction can occur either in meiosis 1 or meiosis 2. Actually, it can occur during mitosis as well. But if it occurs in mitosis, all that's going to affect is whatever cell it happened to in your body. The reason that meiosis is important is because if non-disjunction occurs in meiosis, then you're going to pass on that mistake to any offspring that you might produce. Right? It's only the gametes that get passed on to the next generation. Your fingernail cells stay with you, and all your other types of somatic cells. But anyway, non-disjunction can occur in either of the phases of meiosis, but whether it occurs in meiosis 1 or meiosis 2, non-disjunction leads to aneuploidy. Now remember that ploidy refers to how many of each kind of chromosome you have. And what does EU mean? Like in eukaryote? Means true. Eukaryote literally means having a true nucleus. Okay? Well, the word euploid or euploidy, that is the condition of having the true or correct number of chromosomes. So a normal cell is euploid. If it has the wrong number of chromosomes, it's aneuploid. And non-disjunction is a way that aneuploidy occurs by mistake. So notice on the left, you have non-disjunction occurring in meiosis 1. Only for this one homologous pair. The other pair separated okay. But this one didn't. And therefore, both cells that result from this one splitting into two are aneuploid. There's two ways you can be aneuploid. You can have too many chromosomes or you can have too few. Either way, it's the wrong number. Well, this one's going to get an extra chromosome that it shouldn't have. This one's not going to get either one. Now, both of those can cause problems. Which do you think is worse? Having too few is definitely worse. Because that means all those genes, and therefore all the characteristics that those genes control, will not be in this cell. You can't make any of those proteins, and therefore almost no chance of survival. In fact, no chance of survival.
If you have too much, would that be like a certain mutation?
Well, it is a version of mutation, yeah, because mutation is any change in the DNA. Aneuploidy is a change in DNA. But this is a big-scale mutation. It's not a point mutation affecting just one nucleotide. This affects an entire chromosome. Well, an entire chromosome within every cell of the body. These aren't cells of the body yet, though. These are cells that are becoming gametes. So these four gametes that were produced here, every one of them is aneuploid. Even though everything went right in meiosis 2, since you started with already cells that are aneuploid, the gametes are aneuploid. In the second example, you have non-disjunction occurring in meiosis 2 after meiosis 1 went just fine. Since meiosis 1 went okay, that produced two cells, and for the moment they're both okay, but in just one of those two cells, non-disjunction occurs in meiosis 2. So therefore, the normal cell went on to produce two normal gametes. These are euploid. This one went on to form two aneuploid gametes, though. So if any one of these aneuploid gametes happens to be the one that's chosen to fertilize an egg, if this is a sperm, or to be fertilized by a sperm, if it's an egg, that's going to give you an aneuploid zygote. which probably is not going to be able to survive, and so it'll be just spontaneously aborted, like actually most pregnancies are, even healthy pregnancies. Most of them, women don't even know they're getting pregnant. They just have spontaneous abortions all the time if they're mating, because things have to happen just the right way for it to go successfully. But anyway, if not having enough chromosomes is just going to cause a spontaneous abortion. Depending on what chromosome it is, though, that you have an extra one of, you might be able to survive that. And that causes various things, like Down syndrome. Down syndrome is an example of having an extra chromosome number, whatever. I think it's 13 in the case of Down syndrome. But whatever number it is, there's three of them instead of two because of non-disjunction. And that causes problems, but it doesn't cause death. All right. That's it for how cells work. And that's it for the unit, in other words.